Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Pure Hoops podcast is a presentation of Pure Hoops Media. The Pure Hoops podcast most definitely does reflect the views of our management. Here's three-time NBA champ BJ Armstrong and Eric Newman.
Pure Hoops Podcast, we are back. Sorry for the hiatus. I guess I'm getting good at my other job, producing and directing, because I'm working all the time and traveling. But BJ, great to be back, my man. I just went through the Southern California to New York City temperature change, including a red eye flight. I feel like a man that's been beaten down a little bit.
Well, you know, most will say it's the change of temperature, but you know what? It's the red eye. The red eye gets you. You know, once you get over 40, Eric, you know, you can't do those red eyes. You gotta come hang out with me now. You gotta sit in one place. You gotta have what we call a day of recovery now. You can't just get on red eyes going across, you know, crisscrossing the country here, and you need a little time, my friend. A little rest. You need a little rest now.
I got a little bit. You know what's crazy is this flight has become so easy for me in terms of whether I go to Newark or I go to Kennedy, and the timing and just having my work, my rest. I know what I want to eat. I know what I got to do when I get off the plane as far as work goes to have my mind and body right. And the flight home was easy. It was actually a little less than 5 hours. And I landed at just before 7 a.m. at Kennedy. And, you know, checking the traffic, it would have been over an hour in the car. So there's different trains you can take back to the city that get you home in a set amount of time. So I was home in like 45 minutes. I thought I was like, all right, I slept a little bit. I'm feeling good. And then it just hits me, just this wall of exhaustion. And I was done.
You're like a 10-year vet now, you know. When you're early in your career, you just look at this and say, hey, you know what? I'm ready to go. I'm ready to play. As a 10-year vet, you start counting the back-to-backs. That's where you're at now. You know what? You can't do that anymore. You just can't do it.
The fact that you classify me in that way is flattering. It's flattering. So great to be back on. We've got a good one today. We're going to head out west first and talk some Denver Nuggets basketball. You ready?
Yes, let's do it.
As we've been doing in recent weeks, some special guests joining the podcast with BJ and I really love that. And today we are talking Western Conference Denver Nuggets basketball with Kendra Andrews. She covers the Nuggets for The Athletic. Denver currently sitting third place in the Western Conference. Kendra, thanks for taking the time to join us.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
How's the season going for you?
It's been pretty good. This is my first season on an NBA beat, so it's been, and the Nuggets are making it interesting for me, let's say.
I can imagine. Lots of personas, lots of talent. I've had the chance to sit down with Coach Mike Malone before. There's a lot there for you to work with.
Absolutely. It's a good group of guys.
So, you know, the headline of this season so far has been the up and down of Nikola Jokic. He's, you know, last seven games after a slow start, 23 points a game. What's the difference in him? We've talked about whether or not he came into camp in shape, motivated. Mm-hmm. What's the difference in Jokic so far?
I think he's kind of returned a little bit more to who he was last year in these past couple of weeks. And the word that we've kind of been using to describe that has been lighter. And that might be in terms of his appearance, his physical appearance, and also just the way he's been playing. And I feel like when he came into the season, he didn't have any joy. Like, he lost his happiness for some reason. And now over these past couple weeks, he just looks happier. He looks like he's actually having fun on the court. And I think that that's been translating to him playing better.
Yeah. BJ, before you jump in, he looked stressed. He really did.
Yeah. I mean, it was even off the court. In the locker room, he wasn't really smiley. He wasn't really, you know, cheerful. Now this past week, he called us pigeons in the locker room yesterday, waiting to talk to him. He said, "You guys all look like pigeons sitting on a wire, just lined up waiting to talk to me." He's like cracking jokes. And yes, he definitely looks stressed. And there's a lot of, like you said, there's a lot of speculation of, okay, was it because he played in Serbia over the summer, so he didn't really get to have his time off, do what he usually does? Was he out of shape? What exactly was going on? And that still remains a little bit of a mystery, but whatever has happened these past couple weeks, he looks physically lighter. He looks like he's lost weight, which I'm like, what weight losing program are you on that you can lose weight like that in a week? It's ridiculous. And he just looks bouncier and just better all around.
Kendra, how much do you attribute his being lighter? I use that, you know, I like that term. How much do you attribute that to facing the expectations of a championship caliber team that mm-hmm. I think the fan base has placed on them? You know, when you're playing and you are the underdog, you're having fun, you're sneaking up on people. All of a sudden now, they are the team that other teams are gearing up for, and you can see it by some of the losses they had. I mean, they've lost to Atlanta. They've lost to some teams that I think it's fair to say they expect to win. And now that same joy, you know, just using the term that you use, do you think that attributes to some of the way he's been performing thus far?
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think it honestly goes beyond Nicole and it goes to this entire team. Like you said, some of the losses, they lost to Sacramento in Sacramento. They just the other day on Sunday, they were playing a really close game against the Knicks. That was single digit game late in the fourth quarter, which just shouldn't be happening. And I do agree that it is because there's such big expectations. Their offense has really been struggling so far this season. They haven't found that consistency. And I do think it is because part of it is they're forcing themselves. They're forcing shots. This is the first time in a really long time that people are actually expecting something of them. Last season, they could fly under the radar. It was just so much fun. It was oh my gosh, look what we're doing. We're doing so well. We're, you know, Denver basketball is finally back on the radar, back on the national radar. And to have such a young group of guys, I mean, last year was everyone except for Paul Millsap hadn't been to the playoffs until last season. And so you have a group of guys that they're all 20, 22, 24 years old to then say, oh, well, you made it to the playoffs once. Now you're national title contenders. And you have to go up against LeBron, AD, and the Lakers. You have to go up against Giannis Antetokounmpo and the Bucks. You're on that level now. That's a lot of pressure to put on a young group of guys who until last season really didn't have any experience playing at that level.
You know, Denver, when you look at their team and you look at their roster, clearly they were a group that was put together with a group mentality, right? They're mm-hmm. they're an elite defensive team. They're first in scoring defense. They're third in defensive rating. But when you look at the team and you mention games like the Knicks, and I was watching that game, who is their go-to guy now down mm-hmm. the stretch? Defensively, we know they have a team that they can put a lot of bodies at you. Their second team may be just as good as their first team. But mm-hmm. who is the go-to guy now as we get into the playoffs, as we are putting this expectation? You know, you mentioned LeBron, you mentioned AD, we talk about Kawhi Leonard. Who is their mm-hmm. go-to guy now down the stretch?
You know, that's a really good question because I think before you'd say Nikola Jokic, right? Like last season, I feel like that is their go-to guy. And this season, he has been a bit, he has hit some big shots and some game winners for them late in games. But they've also been putting a big stress on Jamal Murray and how he's their number two. In a league of 1-2 pairs of two stars, they say Jamal Murray is our second star. And I think that they really want him to be their go-to guy. But I think like wanting someone to be their go-to guy is different than actually being their go-to guy. Against Sacramento, when they needed him to be that guy, he failed to get a shot off at the end of regulation, and he also didn't get a shot off at the end of overtime that could have won the game twice for the Nuggets. So I honestly do think that that's still something that they're figuring out, and I think they want it to be Nikola Jokic. And I think these past couple games, this past week, he has gotten back to, you know, they do feel comfortable putting the ball in his hands as time expires. But I think it's still something that they're going to play with, and they're going to be fluid with.
Hey, Kendra, I just have to ask this question here. Now we're in this era of small ball, and you know, we're playing with the 3-point shooting. If Jokic is their first guy, do you see a center being that guy that can actually lead them to the promised land? Because it's a question that we have to ask because of the way the game is being played today.
I think that the way the Nuggets play wouldn't necessarily work for any other team. And like you said, it is a guards league now. And so it is really rare to see a big, especially a center, be this like the centerpiece for their offense. Yet I think it could work for them. They play so much better when Nikola Jokic is the center of their offense and everything revolves around him. And I think earlier on in the season, one of the reasons why the Nuggets offense was struggling so much is because they weren't utilizing Nikola Jokic like they did last year. They weren't playing through him. They weren't letting him set up the plays. And I think when they're more active in getting him involved, they actually play better. So I don't know if that's necessarily going to work for every other team in the league, but I think it could work for the Nuggets.
I mean, he's been the epitome of what it means to be a quote-unquote point center. And, you know, BJ and I talk about this, you know, every so often. You know, teams run their stuff, right? And you hit it on the head a few minutes ago with how much fun the Denver Nuggets had last year playing basketball together and running, whether they're running two-man game through Joker and shooters and slashers are all adjusting around them, whether Murray gets hot and he's just, you know, killing it in the pick-and-roll situation. But to then shift your focus down the stretch to just having the ball in one guy's hands, especially if it's not Joker's, to me makes little sense. Because if you play through him at the high post or you play two-man ball with him and Murray down the stretch, then you're going to put the defense in a position where they're going to have to make choices, whether they're going to really attack their two-man action and help and leave guys open, because they have plenty of guys capable of making open shots. Gary Harris, Will Barton, Paul Millsap for starters. But I don't see the reasoning for changing what they do down the stretch. Maybe that's just me, but I don't see it. And we've seen Joker win games in the final 10 seconds before. I mean, some of those shots have been crazy the last couple of years, but he finds a way to get it done.
I mean, and I think that's one of the reasons why they've kind of kept what they're doing, because Nikola Jokic, he can shoot the ball. Like, just like you were saying, I think it was against Minnesota earlier in the season that he hit a game winner there, and then he hit another game winning 3-pointer like the next night, or it was the night before, I can't exactly remember, but he can shoot. And you know, it was interesting the other day at practice, we were talking about his offensive slump that he was going through, his shooting slump, and we asked Coach Malone, he said, what's kind of the most, like, the weirdest defense that you've seen on Nikola Jokic? And he said, in a couple games, they didn't guard him at the perimeter. They were daring him to shoot because he hadn't hit that shot recently. And so Nikola was kind of second-guessing himself. Should I shoot this? Can I make it? And he's proven over these past couple games that, yes, he can. And so now, guards really do have to – they have to guard him out at the perimeter. Okay, but then you can't leave Jamal Murray open, just as you were saying. So I think it really spaces the floor for them, and it gives them an advantage.
So a couple of talents, just transitioning to the depth and the future of this team. And, you know, we're speaking with Kendra Andrews, covers the Nuggets for The Athletic. So much hype around what Michael Porter Jr. could be. Obviously, a genius move by them, taking him 14th in the draft 2 years ago and being very patient with his rehab and development. And then last year, this is one of, BJ and I have talked about this. This is one of the saddest nights of the NBA draft. We're seeing Bol Bol just sit there in the green room until the 40s. But now they've got them both to develop. Obviously, Porter's played limited minutes in 17 games. Bol is on a two-way deal with the G League team. What's the plan for them going forward? And is Porter just a matter of time because of their wing depth?
Yeah, I'll start with Porter, and I do think it's a matter of time. I think the Nuggets are in a really interesting situation right now. Coach Malone is where you have a talent like Michael Porter Jr. who needs to play. Like, that's the best way you're going to develop this player, really any player, is to play. And they're in a unique position where, yes, they want to develop him, but at the same time, like we were talking about before, they have aspirations. They want to make it deep in the playoffs, if not to the title game. And so when you're trying to balance those things, it's, okay, we really need to get him out and run, but we can't have him making those mistakes that rookies make their first year, that maybe if we didn't have such high aspirations, it's okay. It's okay to drop a few games here and there and let him play through their mistakes. And the Nuggets, I think, are kind of trying to balance that between letting him make his mistakes and learn, but still winning games. And I think that's when you're kind of seeing these lower minutes for MPJ. I think that he's shown what he can do. He is a freak athlete. He's just a natural athlete. He's shown that. He shows what he could do on the offensive end. His defense, it definitely needs improvement. I think that's the one area of his game that is just really obvious that it needs to improve. And I think that's when Malone gets frustrated and pulls him. He doesn't care if he misses a shot, you know, but he cares if he has breakdowns on defense that then lead to easy points for whoever they're playing. But the good thing that Michael Porter has been doing is he's been what we've been calling like an activity player. He's been grabbing a ton of rebounds. He's been all over the board. He's been, you know, just doing the little things that they need him to do that will then eventually make him an overall player. So I think it is a matter of time. I don't know if it's necessarily going to be this season that he has like his big breakout, but I think they'll continue to play him more and more. And I think that that's what's going to make him learn. And I think that'll just, you know, be good for everyone.
Well, one quick follow-up is, has there been a veteran presence on that team? Obviously, Millsap's the first guy that comes to mind, but, you know, it could be one of the younger guys who's been in the league a few years. Is there anyone who's, you know, put their arm around him, taking him under his wing and showing him what it means to be a professional in his, you know, obviously last year not active, and what is his first full NBA season?
Yeah, I think a little bit of everyone has been vocal. I know that in the past couple of games, Will Barton and MPJ have been on the court together a lot, and you see Will Barton talking in his ear after whenever there's a stoppage in the game. He'll go up to him and kind of say, okay, you know, that was good, but, or this is what you need to do next. His locker is right next to Paul Millsap's, and so I think that is a good thing to have that rookie vet combo next to each other in the locker room to be able to talk to each other. But I do think that everyone has been in everyone's ears. You talk about depth, I mean, and there's guys who aren't playing as much. And so I think everyone's just been talking to each other to try and figure out, okay, you're not playing very much. You're still trying to develop, but we're still a team. We just need to be in each other's ears and let each other know what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong, how we support each other.
You know, you mentioned Will Barton, who's one of my favorite players, because he doesn't lack confidence. He doesn't lack confidence. That's, you know, he may be lacking other things, but confidence is not one of them. And
never.
And for our listeners, if you get a chance, you know, you profiled him earlier this week in The Athletic, you know, as, you know, a great read there. You know, he lost his job, you know, the injury, his starting role with the team. Clearly, they need his play and what he brings to the game. What do you think his impact will be and can be for this group as they move forward? Because clearly, you know, he's a key piece to what they're trying to do up there.
Completely. I mean, I've been calling him their most consistent player all season. Him and Paul Millsap, in my eyes, have been their most consistent players. I think that he can do a lot of things for this team. Recently, Malone has been talking about, okay, I can't take all of my starters out and just put all of my bench players in because the bench unit has been struggling a little bit. He says, I need to stagger the starters and the bench. And Will Barton has kind of been that stagger where he will play a little bit with the starting unit and then he'll get pulled and then he'll get put back on the bench. And when he's with that bench unit, you know, he knows that when he's with the starters, he's not the first option for scoring. He's not the second option. Maybe he's the third option, depending on what Gary Harris is doing. He's really doing those other small things. But when he's with the bench unit, he's more of a floor general. He's getting more touches. He's getting more shots. He's telling people where to be. I mentioned that him and MPJ have been playing a lot together. So it's just those things of him being pretty much a chameleon of what this team needs to get done. He's been doing it, whether it's offense, whether it's defense, whether it's rebounding, whatever it is, he just seems to be giving them that spark.
You cover the team. How far do you think it's realistic to think that this team can go based on how many games we've played? And second, who is the actual leader of this group? Mm-hmm. Is it Coach Malone? Is it one of the players? Is it a group? But that's why in watching this team, obviously they're a good team.
Right. I mean, I definitely think that they're a good team. I was just talking about it last night. I think that the title aspirations was kind of I don't want to say an unfair expectation to put on them, but just kind of what I was saying before, these guys, none of them had been to the playoffs this past year until this past season. Their average age is, I think, like 24, 26 years old, something crazy young like that. And just looking at the talent in the West, you know, yes, they're a top three team, but I don't even think that they've been playing their best basketball yet. I think that they have a lot of potential that's untapped. I think they will definitely make it to the playoffs. I think that they can make it to the Western semifinals, and depending on matchups, depending on who's playing, depending on what happens with other teams, I think they can get to the Western Conference Finals. But I think that, you know, title aspirations is a hefty thing to put on this team, as they're still trying. I think they're still trying to figure out exactly like who they are and stuff. So, yeah.
And who's the leader?
Oh, and who's the leader? Yes. You know, I think that Will Barton's definitely the vocal leader of this group. I think Jokic is a quiet dude. He just loves to play his video games. I think he would be happy to come in, play the game, go home, play his video games, go to bed, wake up, do it over again. I think he was wearing a t-shirt the other day that said, I stopped gaming to be here. He was wearing that in the locker room. I definitely think that he's a leader, but you know, in terms of vocalness, I think it's going to be guys like Will Barton. I think Jamal Murray has stepped up into that role a bit more this season. And I think Jokic is kind of more of a leader by example, where he's not going to talk too much, but he's going to go out and play and kind of show you what you should be doing.
Love the Will Barton energy on all fronts.
Yeah.
perfect example of a guy that needed to get into the right situation to move his career forward. So speaking of that and player personnel, I mean, last season, and I'm still kind of shocked, game 7 at home, mm-hmm. It was right there for them. Portland took the game. And this offseason, people were wondering, you know, will Denver make a move to try to, quote-unquote, push them over the top? Or was standing pat and developing their young talent the big move to be made? So, you know, now that December 15th has passed and free agent signees from the offseason last year can be traded, is there a move that Denver should be looking at considering at this point? And obviously, in the last week, the name Drew Holiday has been floated out there as somebody who could be on the move from the Pelicans.
Yeah, I personally think that Denver definitely should be looking at a trade right now. We've talked a little bit about their depth and how guys aren't playing. Majority of those guys, Malik Beasley played for the first time last night in 3 games. I honestly thought it was more. It felt like longer but he, that was
especially with, especially with the role that he had last season, for sure.
Exactly. If I, when someone said, oh, it's only been three games, I'm like, are you sure it hasn't been? It feels like at least 10, or just feels like forever. And this isn't the first time that he's gone through long spans of not playing by coach's decision. One of those games was because he had an illness, but everything else, he was available but just didn't play. And then you look at the small forward position and you see guys like Torrey Craig not playing, which after the role he played in the playoffs last season, you know, he did a lot for this team and he's not playing as much. Juancho Hernangómez had a huge summer winning FIBA with Spain, and he's not playing as much because the team is just so deep. And last season, you know, they had a lot of injuries, so having this depth was really beneficial for them. But now that everyone's healthy, you know, Malone's been kind of playing Tetris and puzzle piecing teams together, but at a certain point you have to figure out what your rotation is. So with that being said, you know, Malik Beasley has been, you know, Shams reported a couple of weeks ago, I think it was just last week, that, you know, Malik Beasley has been receiving offers. He's going to be a restricted free agent this summer. So I think that he is a possibility, as well as Torrey and Juancho. You mentioned Drew Holiday. That was a big topic of conversation for us amongst like the Denver media these past couple of days, talking about what package could you put together for Drew Holiday. And we were kind of saying, okay, you could put together a Beasley, Mason Plumlee, Gary Harris package, but then that does involve you getting rid of one of your starters. And Harris has been a, you know, he's one of those key foundation players for this team. So I think that there are definitely options. And I think they do need to do something to kind of consolidate their talent, because a lot of guys are getting, you know, the short end of the stick and aren't seeing a ton of playing time. And they just have a lot of guys on the bench.
Yeah, guys need to play. And, you know, they're arguably, you know, 11, 12 deep. And
yeah,
I don't think they can afford to lose Plumlee. I mean, he's been just tremendous as far as front court depth and being able to play either position if they have to go big. Mm-hmm. Harris, Beasley, a pick is where, you know, my mind went to as a starting point in a package for Holiday. But as, listen, Gary Harris has been a consistent contributor to this team. I don't think he's elevated his game in terms of consistency in the way that they'd hope, but he's a very good two-way guard. But just imagine that backcourt with Holiday and Murray, and then as Porter continues to develop, all of a sudden there's minutes for him there. So this could be a very it could be a very interesting thing to consider for both teams, you know, if Denver is looking to make that upgrade. BJ, any thoughts from you on, if you're Denver right now, as we have Kendra here, are you looking to deal and consolidate, excuse me, some of this depth, or are you standing pat with what you got?
Well, I think with this group, you have to stand pat, right? This is a team now that, and, you know, Kendra, you correct me if you think otherwise. I mean, they exceeded all expectations just a year ago. And then suddenly now we're going to thrust them into this conversation without them having the opportunity to make a run for a 3 to 5 year window. And that's basically what we're looking at. Now, if you're telling me that Drew Holiday or whatever player pushes them over the top, you know, I'm not so sure if that is the answer when you're looking at, you know, trying to pursue a championship, right? In order to get to that, you know, caliber, you need a little luck, clearly. But you need an exceptional player that can carry the load when we're talking about game, you know, in the conference finals and the finals. I mean, some of these players are just special players. The Giannis's in the East, you're talking LeBron and AD, you're talking Kawhi Leonard. And I'm not sure tampering with your core group is the right answer unless that core player is a star player. And when I mean a star player, it's, you know, you have an opportunity to get what we consider a top five player. You got to do what you have to do. Otherwise, I think you stand pat and you let this core group play itself out.
It's going to be an interesting call for the Nuggets. Kendra, thank you so much for joining us. That's Kendra Andrews. She covers the Nuggets for The Athletic, and we hope to have you back again in 2020 as Denver looks to have a deep run in the Western Conference this season. So, BJ, great to get a perspective from Kendra. Kendra Andrews from The Athletic covering the Nuggets. And, you know, the Nuggets, to me, this is a really interesting situation. When you talk about the roster, you talk about where they stand in the West, and you talk about their choice over the summer to stand pat as around them. You know, Utah added Conley and Bogdanovich. The Rockets, of course, make the blockbuster deal to bring in Russell Westbrook. The Clippers rattle the earth with Kawhi and Paul George. And the Lakers, of course, bring in Anthony Davis with LeBron. So we've had Denver in this group of teams. They're there in the standings at number three, but a lot of people just don't seem to be taking them seriously as a contender because of the four teams I just mentioned.
I think that's fair. I think that's, you know, a fair assessment, Eric, and I tend to agree. When you look at their roster and you look at their team and the way they've built, they've clearly, you know, have gone through the draft with their star players, you know, Jokic and Jamal Murray. And now that those guys are signed to extensions, you know, how are you going to continue to build a team for the long haul and really try to meet the expectations of, you know, what these guys, when I say these guys, those two players in particular, what they're making. Now they are treated like stars, they're paid like stars. And can you build a team around them under the salary cap and all of the things that you have to deal with? And that is the question that we don't know. And I think it's going to be interesting. But at the same time, I didn't get the feeling that they feel that they are ready to compete at that level yet. That was just the feeling of the conversation. But clearly, based on what they achieved last year, they have to believe that they can take that next step as a franchise. And we have to see if this is the group that can get it done or not.
For sure. For sure. If I'm Denver, I'm looking at what's out there as far as a trade goes to upgrade, but that's just me. I'm not giving a future, but they have depth and talent to deal from strength. So at least I'm looking, and that starts obviously with the Jrue Holiday conversation. But, you know, both LA teams, Denver's not in that. I think we can agree Denver's not in that class right now. And, you know, some really interesting comments this past week. We've rekindled some old fire with Kevin Garnett doing press for Uncut Gems, bringing up LeBron and the Heat, Doc Rivers and LeBron going back and forth about load management. And obviously, you know, Doc has a great respect for LeBron and vice versa, but there's still a lot of scars and wounds and memories there from those battles back in the Eastern Conference. So, you know, LeBron on load management, why wouldn't I play if I'm healthy? It doesn't make any sense to me. My obligation is to play for my teammates. If I'm healthy, then I'm going to play. If coach sits me out, then I'm not healthy. It's just that simple. And then obviously Doc has a different philosophy, and he's guided teams to the mountaintop with this in the past. You know, from Doc, it's our philosophy. I don't know what theirs are. I think theirs is whatever LeBron says it is, to be honest. You know, we get to see these guys on Christmas Day, the next chapter for the battle for LA. But, you know, what do you make of both the load management convo here and also – we know there's a lot from both of those guys when dealing with each other and the past battles on the court.
Well, I think you said it right there. They have a mutual respect for one another in their Eastern Conference battles. And clearly, you know, Doc Rivers and LeBron, what they've been able to achieve, you know, one as a coach and one as a player, you know, speaks for itself. Now, I think going back to the comments before, this is a little gamesmanship that we have going into the game. Clearly, they are in the same town now, Los Angeles, for the first time that I can recall where the Clippers feel they are legitimate contenders to win the championship this year. And there are a lot of people around the country and NBA fans who feel the same way, that this team is for real. This team is knocking on the door. Now, obviously, they have to go out and do it. But traditionally, we haven't had that type of talk around here, especially in Los Angeles. It's always been the Lakers town. And now, you know, when you walk around town, you know, you see some Clipper fans and you see them walking with their chest out now. And the Clippers and Doc Rivers, they aren't asking for permission. That's the one thing I will give Doc Rivers and the Clippers. They're not asking for permission from the Lakers to be good. They're coming here to take it. And the Lakers, I think, after the first game of the season, realize that they're in a dogfight now. And the Clippers are coming. They're hungry. They have star players. They have a defensive-oriented team. And they have a coach that's ready to grind. You know, it's a street fight. And I think the Lakers, you know, I think the Lakers now, yes, they are a good team. Yes, they have talent. Yes, they have, you know, all of the things that you try to build to compete. But the one question that I do have is, can this team grind? Can this team contend with the toughness that you know a Doc Rivers team is going to bring? You know, when you talk about that team there in Boston with Kevin Garnett and with Paul Pierce and Ray Allen and Rondo and Big Baby, they came to fight every single night. And you know that's what Doc is doing with this team. And you can see the way they're constructed, that they are ready to grind. And the Lakers, I think they have the Lakers' attention. And I think that's what this is all about. I think it's really built on respect, which is good for the NBA.
For sure. And you took the thought right out of my mouth. This is how the Clippers constructed their team: to grind out games, to build a defensive identity, and to have depth. Because we know, listen, Kawhi Leonard last year, whether he needed to miss 22 games or not, didn't play in 22 games. Raptors were constructed in such a way where they had the ability and the confidence and the belief to go 17-5, and then Kawhi put them, and the entire country of Canada for that matter, on his back and took them to the promised land and was not 100% healthy. So how else is Kawhi Leonard going to be in position to be able to do the same thing this spring if he's not feeling good? So if Kawhi Leonard is injured or Kawhi Leonard needs to sit certain games, like, the litmus test is there. And for Doc Rivers, the 2010 Celtics were beat up. They were bored the second half of the season. And Doc pressed all the right buttons and had those guys ready to go. And they were 6 minutes from a title in game seven with a team that was running on fumes and pride at that point. And obviously didn't win that one, as Kobe and the Lakers won the 2010 title. But Doc's been there, and he knows what it takes. So I can't wait for the Christmas Day matchups. And obviously we'll be looking ahead at those at the top of Christmas week. And another team in the West that deservingly so has gotten a lot of shine and compliments, and it's because mainly of their young star, Luka Doncic. But the Dallas Mavericks, at the top of the week, without Luka, who's going to be out, I think it'll be 2 weeks with a sprained ankle, but nothing serious. They snapped Milwaukee's 18-game winning streak without him. Porzingis had a huge game. Wednesday night, they played a tough one against the Celtics. The Celtics beat them in Dallas. Marcus Smart and Gordon Hayward didn't play. Celtics obviously leaning heavily on Tatum, Brown, and Kemba right now with those guys out of the lineup. But Dallas is more than a one-man show. Is it time to recognize that this is a very, very good team? Or is this just because Luka has just been unbelievable this season? Combination of both. What do you think?
Well, the short answer is no. It's not time to recognize them as a really good team yet, because they haven't proven that yet. They haven't had time to do that. You know, anytime you miss your star player or you lose your star player, the scouting report changes on how you're going to play and defend that team. There's a natural letdown every time a team loses their star player. And anytime there's a change, if you ever watch guys, when teams get traded, during the season, it changes your team. So you're preparing for a team with Luka Doncic, and you know that team. You've had a chance to watch him for 20, 25 games, and you're preparing for that team. And suddenly, when that player is no longer there, how do you prepare for that team? Because you don't know how they're going to play. You don't know now who's going to step up and move into those key situations during the game. So it's basically a free game for you as a player on the Dallas Mavericks right now, because now everyone's role has changed significantly because Luka Doncic is the primary ball handler, and now the roles have changed. Now, if they can continue to do this for 20 or 25 games, and let's hope not, because we want Luka to be back on the court, then I would say, yes, now this team clearly has an ability to play with or without him. But right now, no, I'm not saying that, because teams haven't figured out how to defend this team. I don't know the schemes of how they're using Porzingis and the other players on their team. But let's not discredit the other guys. And that's the one thing that, you know, I want to say as a former player. These other guys are really good players. They've bought into the system of Rick Carlisle and his staff, and they're contributing and doing what's going to allow them to play the best basketball. But these guys are professionals, and they're very capable players, and that's what you're seeing. I know Luka gets all the credit, but, you know, give these other guys respect. They're there in the NBA for a reason, and they're proving it right now when they have an opportunity to step up and play in different roles.
So watching the Wednesday night Celtics game closely, you know, getting the ball to Porzingis both as a trailer in transition so he can step into rhythm threes, two-man game pick and pop, and then getting him the ball, I think it's safe to say getting him the ball in the pinch post. He's about 4 feet outside the lane, BJ. That's where they're looking to feed him and get him going in the half court. But this team can continue to bring it. Whoever they're playing against, if they defend the way they have been in terms of intensity and focus, and listen, they're not going to be a dominant defensive team, but they have wing pieces that are switchable. They've got some active bigs in Dwight Powell and Max Kleber. Obviously, Porzingis can block shots. They're leaning on Tim Hardaway more. Jalen Brunson takes the ball at the point. So this is a team that, and we've talked about it before, a reflection of Rick Carlisle. They're going to bring it every night. But will teams let their guard down against them remains to be seen. Here's one thing that's interesting, and I'm glad you answered the question that I asked about what type of team are they right now. They're 8-7 at home. They're 10-2 on the road. That's very, very uncommon mm-hmm. for a young team trying to finding an identity who's off to a good start. Normally those numbers would be flipped home and away, wouldn't they?
Yeah, when you're trying to make that transition to be a good team in this league, the first thing you want to do is be able to defend your home court. And if you can defend home court and then play above 500 basketball on the road, you know, that's the recipe. I mean, they just have it in reverse. But that says a lot for those young guys to be able to get the focus that they have on the road and play that way, because normally that is the hardest part, especially for young players, is to be able to play away in a hostile environment. But, you know, you win games however you can win them, and you don't take a win for granted. Wins are very hard to come by, but that's a good sign for them that they're able to play the way they're playing on the road. And if that can translate to at home, I think that would speak volumes for what they're doing and how quickly they are becoming an elite team in this league.
So BJ, focus of our show today was Denver and Dallas. Dallas is at Philly Friday, at Toronto Sunday. Denver's got Minnesota at home Friday. They're at the Lakers on Sunday. So for some nice tests for both of those teams. Should be an exciting weekend of NBA basketball ahead. I know you're in a stance over there, buddy. I know you're fighting.
What, a defensive stance? You know, that's always, I don't know if I got in that stance right now, I don't know if I can get out of it. You know, the knees aren't what they used to be. So,
I thought you were taking care of yourself with the travel and the back to back.
You got to be very careful. You know, you got to be very careful now. You got to pick and choose.
Love it. We will be back at the top of the week taking a look ahead at all the Christmas games and all else happening in the world of NBA basketball. Special thanks, as always, to producer Mike Lieber, Bruce Bernstein, editor Benjamin Wolfen, and the entire Pure Hoops media team. Be sure to check out the Mike Wise Show, dropping each and every Monday as Mike has stellar guests. Catch and Shoot 2.0 is back with Aaron Berlin and Otto Strong, dropping Wednesdays. Bucket Sports and Blocks with the one and only Monica McNutt on Thursdays. Also, be sure to check out our new podcast in the grass lane of basketball called the Made Hoops Podcast. And, of course, BJ and I will be back with the Pure Hoops Podcast next week, getting you ready for all the great Christmas Day matchups. Have a great weekend, everybody. Be safe. Stay warm, stay pure. Thanks.
The Pure Hoops podcast is a presentation of Pure Hoops Media.